There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. Phone number 343-0106. And by the way, too, if you hear something that happened on the show, you catch part of it, you want to share it with somebody, if you want to go back and hear it again, pretty easy. Our podcast, and we do a bunch of podcasting because we do so many hours of organic live local content each week. Post those up through our website, first of all. That's where, like, the a la carte. That's buffet style, y'all. You can go get those hours by going to the podcast drop-down at fmtalk1065.com. But you can also subscribe to get our podcast delivered to your phone right there for iTunes listeners. iPhone users, you go to iTunes. I use an Android phone, so I use Stitcher, like someone who stitches. Stitcher's a great app. Spotify, if you're already doing Spotify for your music, you can get podcasts like our shows on there as well. So remember to check them out there or just go and get them from the website. All right, I want to bring on a friend of the show, one who's been on here many times, and I've asked her many ridiculous questions over the years, Deputy Director of Communications for the City of Mobile, Laura Byrne. Thanks for your time.
Not a problem. Thanks, Sean, for having me.
So as I go with my series of silly questions, limes? There's limes coming to... What is with the limes coming to Mobile?
So they may not be actual limes.
Oh.
They are the color of a lime. It's called a lime bike.
A lime bike. Okay.
A lime bike, yes. So starting a week from today, you will start to see some lime bikes around the city. And what they are is a bike sharing service. The way to think about it is think about an Uber for bicycles. So you download an app on your phone, you look on the map on the via your app, see where the closest bicycle is. You walk, you know, drive, or, you know, run, if you will, to your bicycle. You unlock it with the app, and then you hop on.
Okay, but those, so you open the app, and you see where the, I mean, are the bicycles, they could be anywhere, or there are certain locations? How does that work?
Sure, they could be anywhere. What the Lime will do is they are a private vendor, and what they will do is they will initially start at University of South Alabama on one end of the city, and then downtown Mobile on the other end. As they start to implement this service, what they'll do is look at the data to see where people are using it the most, and they'll redistribute those bikes in those more concentrated areas so that they're very accessible.
So, and it's not like you don't have to bring it back to the same place, right? I mean, you could, if I need to go from A to B, but I'm not coming back to A, I can just leave the bike at B?
Yes, exactly. The only request that they ask is to make sure that you're not putting it in front of a driveway, that it's not interrupting a pedestrian or vehicular access. But other than that, just leave it. You know, maybe you just wanted to ride your bike to a meeting or to meet a friend at a restaurant, and then you get a ride back with them. You can leave it there for the next person that wants to pick up the bike.
Okay. I got to ask the question that everybody riding down the road's asking, Laura. How the heck are these things not going to get stolen? I mean, I'm not trying to be negative here, but how are they not going to be in the back of a truck?
It's a very, people have been asking that question a lot. So there are several different ways that Lime has come up with to deter theft. The first is that they're all activated with GPS. So even if you were to take the bike, they can see where all their bicycles are. They know where they are throughout the city. The second is that each of the bikes have a self-activating lock. Once it's locked, you can't ride the bike away. You can only use the bike if you open it up with your app and you pay for it. So you can't just ride away with it. The last thing is that all the parts are completely unique to a bike. So you can't even if you were to steal the bike for parts, you can't use any of the parts on the bike on a regular bike. Does that make sense? So it can only be used as a Lime bike.
Okay, so the handlebars only fit Lime bikes. They only
right.
Okay.
Right. And the other is feature that they have is, let's say you move the bike, you pick it up, and you move it more than 15 feet, the bike will actually start talking to you and will tell you, we will call the police. So, and then Lime, which is kind of a fun feature, so that they will alert Lime that the bike is being stolen, they'll call the police, and then the then they can locate wherever you're taking the bike via the GPS.
Okay, so there are deterrents in place here for them not to run off. Now, how does this, you said that private company, so is this, I mean, is this all private money? Is the city involved in this? How does that work?
Right, so that's why, think about it, how we allowed Uber to come in. So we created a franchise agreement for Uber to start operating in Mobile. We did something similar with the bike sharing service, so we have an exclusive franchise agreement. The beauty of it is that we use no public dollars on this. All of these bicycles are provided by Lime. It's completely operated by Lime. And so that way, we're not at risk for losing any funding or any of that type of thing.
Okay. Now, these, you said as time goes on, they'll have a better idea where the bikes are needed. But you're going to start off on the west side at the campus at South. And then what would there be another clustering downtown? Or what about Midtown?
Correct.
Will people see them?
Downtown is the initial push. But as you know, they start to look at trends, they'll start moving them in other clusters throughout the city.
Okay, so this is going to be something that I imagine there will be, I don't know how the pricing works. You said the app and you pay for it. Is it going to be like Uber with surge pricing? Because I'm thinking like, you know, during Mardi Gras or on a Friday or Saturday night, they may be more popular than, you know, on a Tuesday morning.
There's no surge pricing. For students, it's 50 cents per 30-minute time. For just a regular person, it's $1 per 30-minute time. The other is that they have a program called Lime Access. So if you're low income or unbanked, you can qualify for Lime Access and actually get a very, very affordable rate. In some cases, it's $5 for 100 rides.
Wow.
So that's something to look at, too.
Well, this is good. So this, as of a week from today, people will be seeing these lime-colored bikes in the city.
Yes.
And if
no
somebody
lime,
wants...
just
Lime bikes. And if somebody wants the app, is that just look for Lime Bike, or what do you search?
Yeah, search Lime on the App Store. It's a free app, and you can download it. You can put in your credit card information, and that's how you pay for it. Now, let's say you don't have a credit card. They do have some other ways for you to use the bike. So what you would need to do is go on their website. It's www.limebike.com, and they'll walk you through the process of how you can prepay for bike rides if you say you don't have a credit card for that reason.
Okay. And I'm sure there'll be a whole host of people that wake up to this story next week when they start seeing the bike. So we'll be pointing them to this podcast or talking about it again. Just joining us, talking to Laura Byrne, Deputy Director of Communications for the City of Mobile. While I have you on, I've got to ask you about another thing that had us talking with the city. And that is the collection of fees to strengthen stormwater program.
Yes.
This has started a lot of talk on this show this week. Talk to me about this and what this proposal is, and then is this something that is going to be policy now? Does it have to get approval? How does that work?
Sure. It does need approval by the city council. What they have done is they've put it forth towards a committee. It's an administrative services committee that will meet next week. Once the committee meets, then it will be on the agenda again for council to vote on it. And that's how it works.
Okay. And this money, what it said, $10 per household?
Per year.
Okay. And where does that money go?
It goes into a stormwater management fund. So we have a stormwater program at the city. It's one of the first priorities of the administration was that when Mayor Simpson first stepped into office, we were called the poster child of stormwater management. We had a lot of issues with our stormwater program. So that was one of the first priorities for this administration was to improve that, to ensure that we had a very strong stormwater program. We want to continue to add to that program to help with improving our water quality, looking at, you know, our drainage issues, looking at how we can stop, you know, overflows and that type of thing. And so in order to do that, you obviously need funding in order to continue to improve that program.
Okay, so the $10 or the half cent per square foot for commercial properties, that goes to the fund. And does that fund, is it going to be servicing a bond to do bigger things, or is it going to be pay as you go? What's the policy on that?
Sure. No, we won't be doing any bonds. It'll just be a program. It'll be a part of our budget for our stormwater program. So that's, you know, everything from like our litter prevention effort to some of our larger projects with drainage and that type of thing. But all the funding is geared towards stormwater.
When we talk about drainage, you know, I think about the things we can see, like the ditches and where the water goes in under the street. But what we can't see is the pipe issue, and how much of the flooding we had last week. How much of that is pipes underground versus things above ground?
Well, it could be some of both. I'm not the city engineer; he could speak to this more specifically. But there are a host of issues that do happen underground. Majority of it are the issues that we have underground. They're very expensive. People don't really think about them until you have situations like last week where people are able to kayak down their neighborhood. Then people, obviously, it's towards the forefront of their minds, but they are very expensive projects that we have to look at, but they're very significant and they're very important for, you know, the strength of our infrastructure.
Well, okay, and that's the question. I mean, there are some things that you go, okay, well, you can do litter traps or do these things, and people can understand those, you know, they cost X. But when you start, you know, like any project, you remodel the house or anything, if you start digging up pipes, you know, then that can lead to this, leads to that, leads to that, leads to that. That's the...
Sure.
So this could be big money.
Right. And then sometimes, you know, you don't know until you start to, you know, peel back the layers, and then you have a better idea of how magnificent that issue is.
Now, what about this? You talked about this $10 fee. If this passes city council and this is a thing, will the city send a bill to a home? Will it be collected when we pay property tax? How is that done?
What we've done is that we are partnered with the county, and so when they collect the property county taxes that you receive, it'll be on that same bill.
Okay.
That way you're only receiving one bill.
All right, so it's not going to be a separate check.
It's
not a separate check. It's going to be under the same bill.
Right, and so that's the other part that the council will vote on, is that memorandum of understanding with the county revenue that they are providing that service for us.
Oh, Laura, I appreciate your time, whether it's bicycles or stormwater. I appreciate the information.
No problem, Sean.
All right, Laura Byrne, Deputy Director of Communications with the City of Mobile. And I am busy texting people information on the bicycles, but we have it up on our social media platforms as well. So a week from today, 500 lime-colored bicycles in Mobile. Y'all ride safely, please. And get those, you know, whatever the strap thing is you put on your jeans or your long pants so you don't get them in the derailleur there. All right. 120, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. Hey, y'all. Midday Mobile, glad you're here. I wanted to be a part of the show. 343-0106. That's our phone number, 343-0106. Also want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and see what's happening. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going today, Sean?
It's good. You know, and variety is the spice of life, right? And I think about the number of gift items under one roof at Mobile Bay Coins, and y'all got that on lock.
Yeah, it is pretty phenomenal. We were talking to somebody who came in sort of in a panic the other day. They're like, I need a birthday gift. I don't know what to do, but they like the Old West. And we have multiple options for them, from Morgan silver dollars to those gunslinger silver rounds that we got in. Pretty much any theme, any idea, any concept you come up with that you need a gift for or you want to collect, we've probably got something here in the shop that can accommodate that.
Okay. What about, we've talked about this in the past, the change, if people have not been listening to us, then shame, but since our discussion late May, early June, about the change in policy for buying precious metals.
It has been phenomenal. So as of June 1st and continuing on for the next 5 years, this is not a sales tax holiday, this is a sales tax change where they no longer apply sales tax to gold and silver bullion or U.S. coins and currency. So if you've been heading over to Florida to try to buy stuff without paying sales tax, shame on you. You don't have to do that. Come to Mobile Bay Coins. There's no sales tax on the gold and silver bullion, none on the American coins, American currency, and you don't have to drive over there. Just keep it local.
All right, great stuff. Give us directions to drive over there.
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always call us at 725-1590 or go on to Facebook, look up and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
All right, Angelo, thank you. We'll check back soon.
Have a good one, Sean.
I will do. All right, 126 FM Talk 106.5. Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News joins us here in just about 6 minutes. A lot more to talk about with him. I do want to add this story to the mix when we have a chance here. I think I heard Laura Ingraham mention it earlier, but can't pass this up. NFL's first male dancers will hit the sidelines this season. Right? Story from David Williams over at CNN, which, by the way, Dalton, if you look at that story, it's the beginning of the embedded video. Does he not look like Ludacris? If you look at the guy on the CNN story, yeah, and we'll put this up on Twitter, is this Ludacris's brother or something? The rapper Ludacris? It says, NFL fans will see history made this season. It has nothing to do with what goes on between the goalpost. The Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints will have male cheerleaders dancing on their squads for the first time. Dancers Quentin Perron, and Napoleon Jennings have been prepared. What great names. If you couldn't be the first dancers for the NFL, you got to have pretty awesome names. Have been preparing for the NFL season since they made the Rams cheerleading squad in March. Quote here from Jennings. He tweeted, I still can't believe I'm one of the first males in history to be a pro NFL cheerleader! Exclamation mark. Other teams like the Indianapolis Colts and the Baltimore Ravens have stuntmen, according to reports. So they're not dancers or stuntmen. So we're getting into qualification of what your job. Are you there to be doing stunts, or are you dancing? Perron and Jennings will be dancing alongside their female teammates and doing the same moves. Los Angeles Rams, Perron and Jennings' success inspired 25-year-old Jesse Hernandez to try out for the New Orleans Saints cheerleading team. He told the folks at KATC that his mom sent him a link with the story. She told me it was my time to shine. He posted a video before his final audition. He said, the process has been great, and everyone's been real nice to me, and I can't wait to see where this goes. Yeah, so there we go. And, by the way, just before we get into the meat of this, Dalton, does that not look like it could be Ludacris's brother?
Well, it does, and I didn't notice until you brought that up, but maybe it is Ludacris. You might remember his song, I Want to Get It in the Georgia Dome on the 50-yard line while the Dirty Birds kick for three. Now, he might have been talking about something else.
Right, I thought maybe it was something
but
else.
But maybe all this time he was talking about cheerleading for the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay, you know, there's a bunch of people up in arms about this. I can't believe what they're doing here with the NFL. I guess it's the fact that they're dancers, because having men on in the cheer squad is not that strange a thing. I mean, sitting at Brian Denny, you know, watching the cheerleading squad, there's guys there that are holding up the cheerleaders, female cheerleaders, and spinning them around and doing all that stuff.
And usually their shoulders and arms are as big as
those guys
could
whip your butt.
They can throw the girls like 50 feet in the air.
Yeah, those guys are strong.
But yeah, I guess the dancing would be the difference here. And they said stuntmen.
What's the difference?
I'm not sure.
Are they shooting them out of a cannon versus them doing the Macarena?
Maybe a reenactment of the film Bullet in the middle of the L.A. Rams stadium or something like that, where they're driving flaming cars through. I don't know, but it seems to me like, you know, the NFL has fallen so far behind in the eyes of some, whether you're talking about the Washington Redskins and whether that name should be changed, and the CTE and concussions. It's almost like a magician saying, you know, look at my hand over here.
Right.
While all this stuff is going on with the other hand, they're saying, look, we're taking the lead here on having actual dancing male cheerleaders. We're actually doing something different.
Like, I don't, like, the easy layup for somebody, you know, in our capacity would be get on here and say, I hate it. I don't really care. It doesn't bother me either way, but I got to ask, was there a big demand for this? Were the phone lines at NFL headquarters going, you know, y'all'd have something if you had some dudes dancing out there? You ain't getting nothing right now,
I think that your normal the person who will tune into an NFL game or show up probably does not like the fact that there will be male dancers out on the field. And if it takes a month away from the team's 12 cheerleaders that fill out the calendar every year,
right?
I mean, I'll go ahead and register that complaint. I don't have a problem with male cheerleaders being on the field, but if they start invading the calendars, then I'll have a problem.
And then there's going to be the big fights where they're like, I'm not a dancer, I'm a stuntman.
Yeah.
Keep me out of this. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, joins us next on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Y'all hold on a second. Y'all, I mean, just give me 2 seconds here. BENTLEYFORALA. Dot com. Is it dot org? Okay. And there we are. Oh, BentleyForAlabama.org. That's good. Got the website up and... also joined in this discussion with the man from the Alabama Daily News, our buddy Todd Stacey, and got the website open, yours and his.
Well, his might be a lot more exciting right now. I don't know.
What the heck is going on here, Todd? Todd, what is... Now, first of all, it says, well, all this stuff was put up back on Memorial Day or back in May or something like that. How this did not... get picked up in a dragnet before then, I don't know, but we now are aware of it, and what is this all about? I mean, he says this is just his legacy? Really?
Yeah, well, that's what he told Sean Ross, and credit Sean Ross. You know, he did a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yellowhammer?
With Yellowhammer News. And now, granted, it kind of reads like, kind of like a question and answer. You know, maybe he submitted questions via email. I mean, they didn't really get deeply into stuff like you would in a real interview, but
right. But
he got it, and so yeah, they're talking about their Bentley for Alabama. What the governor did, during his term, and what he would say are successes that he accomplished, and things like that. So, of course, in the interview, he mentioned maybe a possible Senate run in 2020. We can get to that in a minute. But it's really more of a legacy piece. Sean, what I think it's about is less about Senate, less about really even politics at all. I think this is about the civil trial that's about to start. He's being sued by Spencer Collier, his former director of public safety. And, that civil suit is going to begin soon, and they're going to be striking a jury and all these kind of things. So this seems to be more like a public relations move to try to remind people that Bentley was an okay guy. I think that may be a tall task, but we'll see.
Okay, but I got so many questions here, Todd. So I mean, if you're going to seat a jury here, you're going to have a jury that doesn't have an opinion, right? I mean, you're going to have jury members that don't have an opinion one way or another about Governor Bentley. I mean, would they even be people?
Pretty tough.
If you did find that,
everybody has an opinion. I think in most jurors, when they're in that jury room or when they're being questioned, they generally ask not whether or not you have an opinion, but whether your opinion would make you biased in determining the outcome of this case. And most people are going to say no, so he probably won't have a problem there. But yeah, he wants people to have a good feelings about Robert Bentley, so that. Yeah, that doesn't enter all the negative stuff, all the scandal maybe is not foremost on their minds when they're asked to render a judgment on this civil trial.
So this online Bentley gubernatorial library that he's posted up here is supposed to be just through osmosis, seek into the consciousness of the Alabamians, reminding them of the good times, so the 12 that are selected will have that in their mind.
That is my speculation completely. Now, look, I will say this. All governors, all politicians want their legacy to be protected after it's gone.
Sure.
I worked for Governor Bob Riley.
Yep.
When he retired, there was a lot of work that we did in trying to remind people that, he did a good job when he was governor. The trouble is, once everybody leaves office and finds other jobs, there's nobody to really do that. It's not somebody's job to continually remind people and, to have a website, for goodness sake. So that takes money, that takes hours of help and things like that. So that's really an interesting question to me, is who's paying for it?
Right, that was my next question.
Is Rebecca?
Who is paying for it? I mean, is this money that... I mean, I think he got his hand slapped hard enough, right, for moving campaign funds where they shouldn't be.
Yeah, so it could be campaign funds. Of course, he has to disclose that. Any of his campaign funds, it doesn't matter how they're spent. If they're spent, you've got to disclose it. More likely, it could be C3 money, some of his private group money. He had the AceGov group.
Well, that's what about that. Is that still there? Is the AceGov PAC still in existence?
It was my understanding that it was disbanded, but I could be wrong about that. But even if it did disband, all they had to do was create another one. And remember, that money really can't be traced. You don't see the donors. You don't see the contributions or anything like that. So they could easily be running out of that. I would imagine that's probably what they're doing. I have been told that Bentley is just personally wealthy. I don't know how. I mean, goodness, he got hit hard during this divorce and lost everything, lost a lot of stuff. But I guess he could be paying for it himself. And I'm also told that Rebecca Mason, who was, of course, the alleged paramour, Mr. Whatever you want mm-hmm. to say, is working for him in his dermatologist.
Oh, she is. Yeah, I've got that. Unless something's changed the last couple of weeks, I think that's a thing. The way he gets it, come on, man. You know how he's getting the money back. It's two words. Todd, it's cool sculpting. You've watched the cool sculpting ad. It's where the website's launch may have more to do, like you say, with upcoming trial. And when does that hit? Do we have a date for the start of that trial?
I don't have a date, but they've they've released some of the interviews and things mm-hmm. like that. So that kind of got out there. I don't know about a start date for the trial, but it's supposed to be coming up. That may be coincidence, but I don't think anything's really coincidence in politics. Things happen for a reason, and it's not just the website either. There's this social media presence. They're on Facebook, they're on Twitter, like getting it all out there, and there's just not really a reason. Why do it? Why even care? It's not for this.
And it launched back, at least according to the story, right? It launched back in May sometime, I think. It's been out there.
Yeah.
It's been out there. Now we're just all noticing it.
Right. And people, it's been rumored, especially the... I saw it back then, and I remember a few weeks ago seeing the Twitter get going again. And I had to kind of do a double take, kind of blink my eyes and say, is this old? Like, I'm checking the year. Mm-hmm. Like, is this last year? Am I not processing this correctly? But no, he's out there. Bentley's out there trying to really rehabilitate his name. But look, if he really wants to run for Senate in 2020, I think he's got a long way to go.
Well, I want to get to that, but he does take a swipe, at least the way I see it. He does take a swipe at Kay Ivey in his article, in his interview with Sean Ross, right? I mean, where's the quote? I've now lost the quote. He said something to the effect, he was asked, would you consider a return to public office, maybe U.S. Senate in 2020? He said, I love serving the people of the state. Serving as governor is the greatest honor of my life. I have heart for our people, and I believe we're all called to serve one another in some capacity. I found public service as a way to do that. I believe in what is missing in public service today is loving the people that you serve and wanting to help those who need help, especially the less fortunate. He says, I want the people to know how much I truly care about them. I love being a physician, taking care of patients. Being governor opened up a whole new world to me. And see how it changed people. And then he said, I would just like to thank them again for allowing me to serve as their governor in this campaign season. Just remember, public service is tough, and credit goes to anyone willing to step into the arena. I never intended to be a caretaker governor. Ooh, Todd.
Huh.
I mean, Kay Ivey didn't do anything to him. She was there to step in. I mean, she didn't. I mean, he could have tried to stay and see what happened. She didn't make the deal.
Right. Yeah, he's the one that resigned and stepped down. I didn't read into it like that until I just heard.
That's because you're a nice person.
It.
Right.
Well, but now that you say it, you're right. And that was probably a swipe at Kay Ivey. And look, whether or not you support Kay Ivey doesn't matter. But of all people...
Right.
Robert Bentley cannot be critical of KIV. Yeah, she took that job as lieutenant governor. She was elected twice, and I'm sure she never imagined, you know, having to assume office the way she did. It wasn't easy. The state was in crisis, and of all the people that can be critical of KIV, one that can't is Robert Bentley.
Right. I mean, like, it was some Machiavellian scheme she had to undo Bentley. I mean, it's kind of, that would be his, I guess, in his mind, he's probably, that KIV, she had it in for me. Dude, she was your lieutenant governor. You were the governor.
Well, yeah, really. That's insane. But I'll tell you this, you know, like I said, I worked in the Riley administration, and when the Bentley transition happened, I remember there was a lot of, they would kind of see ghosts that weren't there. They would blame Riley for a lot of things that would happen and blame, you know, those who worked for him. I mean, you know, like, it didn't make any sense. When things didn't go well, we got to find somebody to blame. It must be the previous governor. It must be Bob Riley, or it must be all these other enemies. They would kind of, you know, create these ghosts and start believing in them. So that's kind of what reminds me of. When you say that, it kind of reminds me of that, like, you know, it's almost like sour grapes.
I didn't even think about that, the transition. I'm up against the news break. Can you hang on for a second? Because
sure.
I'd love to see through your eyes what it was like during that transition when Bentley takes office for his first term. And we're talking to Todd Stace, who worked, of course, in the Riley administration, but with Alabama Daily News. You can check out the website, aldailynews.com, and more conversation with Todd when we return for 146 FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 151 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad you're here and have a great conversation with Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. And talking about this, I don't know, relaunch, if it is a relaunch or a fresh launch for the former governor of the state on social media and on the website. And does this have anything to do with the Senate race in 2020, or does this all have to do with the upcoming civil case with Spencer Collier? And when we went to the break, it had me, I don't know, twisted up for so many questions, but one of them was to see the world through your eyes, Todd, as you were there in the transition, as leaving the Governor Riley leaving office, y'all leaving office, and handing it over to Bentley.
Yeah, it was very interesting times, because you got to remember, you know, there are two Republicans, right? And it's the first time a Republican administration has turned over the reins to another Republican administration in the history of the state. So you would think that everything would be hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't. It was very cold. You know, I think Bentley really didn't, their entire team were still kind of bitter, because in the primary, Governor Riley had endorsed Bradley Byrne. You know, now look, that was 7 months ago or whatever, you know, compared to when you're actually doing the transition. But I think they really held on to that and did not love any of us. And, you know, so it was kind of a cold reception, right? Like, we were told to be very courteous and helpful and try to explain our jobs to people. You know, we all write memos and books about what we do for the governor, do for the state. But, you know, there was very little interaction, just because they kind of kept us at arm's length. So I understand, that's fine, whatever, that's politics. But I do think that it created it added to them sort of not getting their sea legs out the gate. I mean, you go back to 2011 and really even into 2012, Bentley, man, he really stumbled out the gate. You know, mm-hmm. Matter of fact, inauguration day itself, I mean, you know, he stumbled repeatedly. And so I think they could have used a lot of that experience. I think they could have benefited from some Riley folks that had been, you know, doing this for a little while and had some experience. And instead, they kind of brought in their own crew and they want to do it their own way. Nothing wrong with you know, new blood and fresh eyes, but, you know, it took them a while to really get their sea legs going. And I think, and, you know, then the legislature really kind of ran circles around them.
Yeah.
But it was a while before they learned how to work together.
Well, and it is odd. I mean, as you point out, this shouldn't be, it shouldn't be of question, because it's, even though the endorsement was made for Bradley Byrne from former Governor Riley, it's still Republican to Republican transition. It's not like y'all were setting booby traps in the Blunt Mansion.
Right. I think, and I really regret this, because I really think it contributed to a lot of the things that are going on right now. I think it really set the state back. Bentley, for whatever reason, had a lot of distrust for Riley, had a lot of distrust for those of us who worked for him, had a lot of distrust for the legislature, the leadership. You know, back then it was Marsh and Hubbard. And so that led to so many, just that distrust and that inability to work together led to so many things later on that, you know, got people in trouble. So I'm not blaming it all on Bentley. Everybody played a role. I'm just saying, you know, they did tend to sort of create ghosts and believe in them, as far as, you know, well, somebody's out to get me, Riley's out to get me, or Hubbard's out to get me. You know, it was never the case. Everybody wants the governor to be successful. Everybody wants this brand new Republican majority to be successful. But you can't blame it all on Bentley either, because he probably had folks whispering him in his ear, you know, how you can't trust this person or can't trust that person. So anyway, it wasn't good for the state. But when I hear him, when I hear things like that about blaming Kay Ivey for this or kind of taking shots at Kay Ivey, that's what it reminds me of. It's like it was never his fault. It was never Bentley's fault, anything that ever happened to him. Whether he failed to get a bill through or got caught in a scandal, it was always somebody else's fault. And that's not leadership. And that's why I don't think he has a chance rehabilitating his career to run for the Senate.
No, and I mean, you just laid out, if people think, even if they didn't pay attention to, you know, what he did, if he didn't get a bill pushed through in the legislature, whatever, they all remember what was going on in the downfall, right? The downfall of Bentley and all the different pressers, when I would go, why is this dude even talking? Why is he doing this? Why he better just stay at the mansion, not talk. But he did. He basically said, you know, he would say, well, I own this, and then he would tell you all the reasons he doesn't own it, you know, why it's not his fault.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
We were trying to pass a charter schools bill, and, you know, this is a legislative initiative. We've been working really hard on this, and Bentley insisted that he had to be the driving force. It had to be his bill and the governor's bill. And so, of course, look, he's the leader. You say, okay, governor. But, you know, then they didn't lift a finger. So, you know, there are many instances of that. But, look, you can't duck responsibility. That's what leadership is. You see it too often, not just in the state, but nationally. You know, I think people appreciate politicians that stand up and take responsibility every once in a while. That wasn't Bentley. Love him or hate him, you know, voted for him or didn't vote for him, don't care. But I think his downfall came from an inability to take responsibility. So.
Great perspective on that. And if folks want to check you out, of course, the website, give them the address, and then talk about how to get all your daily mailer there about what's going on in the state and around the country.
Yeah, it's really easy. It's aldailynews.com. Every morning I send out a daily news digest that covers really the top five stories from the state and around the country. Like today, we did some reflection on the congressional races that were happening and why all that matters. You know, we have news clips from around the state. I try to include as many outlets as I can, the front pages of all the newspapers. So it really gives you a good rundown of just what you need to know today. And it's free. You can subscribe online. It's just aldailynews.com. Click subscribe right there on the homepage, and it's free to sign up. You'll get an email every day about 8 o'clock.
I
really appreciate that.
Hey, I appreciate the news that you pass along. And as always, thanks for being on the show. Come back soon.
You bet, Sean.
All right, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. I'm out of here. Feinbaum on the way next. I'll see you all in the morning for Mobile Morning starting at 6:00.